You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. You can help get the Henday built. And Shagar, we'll get to Team Canada in a second, but the Edmonton Oilers limp home, 2-3 on the road trip. The one consistent of the road trip is they allowed 3 5-on-5 goals in each of the five games. They did manage to win two of them, but that's just not a recipe for a long-term success. And when I broke it down, pretty much every line, every defense pairing, you know, goaltenders, they're all responsible at different times. It's been a collective team issue right now.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, it's everybody's kind of taking their turns. Definitely saw it last night. They're not playing well enough when the game is tied, when the game is tight. You know, they're not. They're being outscored. They're being outchanced. They're being, when the game is close, and generally, obviously, that's early in a lot of games. They're not playing a high enough brand of hockey, and they're giving up too many high danger chances when the games are close. So they gotta tighten it up, man. They really do. They had a lot of good mojo going on early, and some of that's bleeding off here, and the inconsistencies in their game are starting to catch up with them. They're playing from behind too much. They're not starting on time. Lots of stuff going on at even strength that they got to tighten up for sure. A killer power play and a great penalty kill are only going to get you so far.
No, it's got them pretty far. They're 11-4, but obviously it's something that they have to work on. No question about it. There's a clear weakness for that team right now. So for me, last night it we saw it again, and this has been an ongoing problem. Regardless of how great he played in St. Louis, Mikko Koskinen, according to ClearSight Analytics, last night was the 7th low percentage goal he allowed this season. That's tied for second most in the NHL. He led the NHL in those type of goals last season. Shagar, it's been an issue that he just can't seem to fix. And to me, I think it's a mental focus thing. Like, Lowry's shot from the top of the circle, not a dangerous area at all, not even that hard of a shot, and it just squeaks right through Koskinen. It's not one that, it just can't happen. And I look at his play over the last five games and all of his numbers underlined everything. I would start Stuart Skinner tomorrow night for a variety of reasons to get the team's attention. Maybe that say, guys, we're at home against a rookie with a rookie here. We got to be better, because Stuart Skinner has been better when you look at the underlying numbers than Koskinen.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't blame them if they wanted to give him a start. I think so. I think he's been decent when he's been in there. He's been good, and maybe lights a fire under the team. You got to shake something up here against Winnipeg. Like, you know, we haven't really talked about the fact that, I mean, that's a team that embarrassed him in the playoffs, swept him. And I know that all the games were reasonably close, and they were in the series, in each game of the series, but they got swept by this team. And I would have thought that in that game, even though they were on the tail end of a road trip, they would have played early on like there's a little bit more pride on the line. You know, you need to... I thought there would have been more to that game for them. And they woke up and they fought their way somewhat back into it, and the temperature went up and they met that moment. But I don't know why that wasn't a bigger deal to them early. So they got to shake something up against this Winnipeg team. This team, just for whatever reason, just has the ability to just strip this Oiler group of their mojo completely. And that includes their big guys, as we saw in the first half of that game. So, yep, start Skinner, light a fire underneath him. You know, I'd probably go back to McDavid and Draisaitl on separate lines again. I don't know, maybe shake things up a little bit and just try and shake something loose against this group, because I expected more emotion quicker from the Oilers to earn some of that back, what they lost to this Winnipeg team in the playoffs.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal, no question. You know, maybe they'll say, hey, final game of a five-game road trip. I'll be curious to see how they bounce back against the Jets tonight. The Oilers, though, sluggish starts have been a problem on the entire road trip. They're playing catch-up every game. And there's another thing that suddenly, like, that wasn't the problem early on. right? The Oilers early on when they went 9-1, they were scoring first for fun. And now they're giving up the goal. They're playing catch up all the time. And while they were able to come back against the Rangers and against the Boston Bruins, it's just, even against the Blues, it's just, you can't keep doing it. It's just not a recipe for success.
Well, and again, this comes down to starting on time and playing well when the game is on the line and not waiting until you get the injection of being down two goals to wake up. You know, so when the game is tied at even strength, they have 40% of the high danger chances. They're giving up way more quality chances to the opposition when the game's tied. Like that's when you got to be pushing the issue and going to get it. And they, for whatever reason, they 5-on-5, they just don't seem to be able to elevate, especially early on in games. So I completely agree. They got to figure it out. Dave Tippett needs to pull some strings and push some buttons here and figure out how to get more out of this group in the early going. But, you know, back to Koskinen, I mean, you can't have that happen. It's been too much of a thing in his game, and yes, he's won a lot of games this year, and yes, he's battled and been very, very good for them on a lot of nights. I'm not going to completely pile on to the guy, but you can't have that be part of your game at the NHL level. You got to figure out how to exercise that demon, because, you know, here we go again from him, from his team, from his coach, you see on the bench. Oh, here we go again, right? And that's not great. So we'll see how he does.
So I said I'd start Skinner. Would you?
Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that. I think just trying to shake a different sense of urgency loose from your team. As much about the fact that I think Skinner looks poised to potentially give you a good game, I thought he came in and played pretty well. But shaking a different level of awareness loose from your team early on. Sometimes when you do that, you go with a less experienced goalie or a guy that it's a little bit different. You got to make sure you're on it at both ends of the ice, just to give it a different feel even. So, yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea, and I would probably do it. I mean, you don't want to kick Koskinen's feet out from underneath him, but it's after that happened, you got to send the message that it's also not nothing. It's your start. It's the way your team feels about its start. And that's a really important thing for a goaltender to be able to safeguard and protect his team. So I'd be okay with Tippett going away from him for a game here.
The bottom six obviously start. Hey, the third line started out really well, and they've kind of fallen off a little bit. They're obviously leaking too many goals, but the entire lineup leaked goals,
yeah,
on the road trip. So the road trip, I don't even know if I can point out that the bottom six was clearly worse than the top six, really. But obviously, it was a little bit. To me, right now, I would play Colton Sevier over Kyle Turris in the fourth line. Colton Sevier is just more responsible defensively. He's better on a forecheck. I haven't seen Turris really do much. I know it's not a huge move, but I would play Sevier with Ryan, and you can pick whichever one you want, Perlini or Benson. I haven't seen much difference between the two of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Benson's a little bit more physical. So, you know, that's what I would do right now. And I think you just kind of got to live with Fogel, Cassian, and McLeod and hope they get going.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with you on Sevier. I think when you're wanting a certain style of game from your team, you're more likely to get that from Colton Sevier than you are from Kyle Turris. So I think that's more of a natural fit for the things that Dave Tippett wants. You know, when he was asked before that Winnipeg game how his team is different than the team that lost in the playoffs, he said, we've got different players, evolution of the personnel, and it's more of a grind game. He feels his team has more of a grind game now than it did back when they lost to Winnipeg in that playoff series. So with that in mind, you got to put those players on the ice. So I think Sevier for sure. You know, Perlini over on the other side, I mean, he had the one good chance. You know, when he wants to shoot the puck, he can shoot it as well as any of those bottom six forwards, but we're not seeing a lot of that from him. So, you know, Benson will work hard, and he'll try hard. But really, this is about a third line that needs to start pushing the pace and generating like they were earlier on in the season. And then McDavid and Draisaitl trying to figure out a way to impose themselves on the game earlier. And this Winnipeg group, for whatever reason, has done a good job of putting those guys in their place offensively in the early going of games.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, the Elks get their first win since Labor Day last night. I didn't watch it live because there was soccer on. I shouldn't say that. I watched the first part live, then the hockey game came on.
Yeah.
I PBR'd it. I watch it today. Oh my, like, good on the Elks to get a win. They don't care how it was, but my goodness, like, the punter for Toronto was horrific. I don't know if I've seen that many terrible punts by one punter in a game. Like, my goodness, it was awful. You know, the Elks, they won the game because Toronto basically dressed like a preseason lineup. They didn't really seem to care about winning. But nothing I saw, like, if anything, I thought that was a step back for the quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. Dealing with better field position, had opportunities. Don't think that it was, you look at that performance and think, okay, it's been progression every week. That's probably a bit of a stall.
No, it was a big stall.
Yeah, so I would agree with you. Picks, throwing picks, being a little bit predictable. Whatever. It was a win, and I'm sure the group is happy that they got a win. It'll make them feel a little better about themselves as they close out the season here. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. It is what it is. They grabbed a win. Good for them. Still not sure why they're not playing Arbuckle. I was interested to hear Matt Schinetti's report on the sidelines last night that Arbuckle expects to be the starter next year. I thought that was interesting. My understanding is he's been told he'll have the opportunity to compete for the job, and that's it. That it'll be the two players competing for the job, but that's assuming the guys that told them that are even there next year. So I guess we'll wait and see.
Well, hey, I don't know if Cornelius was completed 46% of his passes last night. He had 160 yards and three interceptions. So
yeah.
I don't, I can see why maybe last night you're standing on the sidelines. You're like, yeah, I'm pretty confident I'll be the starter next year.
Well, yeah, I think Arbuckle's going to have an opportunity for sure. I mean, it's, and I think it's why they have him, so that they aren't relying on Cornelius, and I think that would have been a mistake to do that. And who knew what they were going to get from Cornelius between the trade and the end of the year, and now that you look at it and go, what have they gotten from him? It's been just okay. Probably glad they have a veteran quarterback that's signed and ready to go. Now, how good he can be with this group, we won't know, because it doesn't look like he's going to play. Let's let it die a painful death this season, and we'll see what happens next year and who's around to coach and who's around to, you know, what it looks like, how many of these people are going to be back, and if it any better results in the early going next year, and if Arbuckle's at the helm.
Well, they're not practicing today or tomorrow. Obviously, they're traveling. So if Arbuckle couldn't play yesterday, what is he possibly learning in video in a day or two that's going to allow him to start on Friday? You know what I mean? Because if he doesn't play on Friday, what was the point of acquiring him at this point? It makes no sense to me. Like, absolutely zero sense.
Well, I think you were one bad hit on Cornelius away from, like, what if Cornelius grabbed two out of three games? What if they won two out of three games after they traded Harris? Then now you're actually playing for something, and then you're one hit away from what if Cornelius isn't able to go. So I understand the insurance idea, because they didn't know at the time. They thought maybe there was some meaningful football to be played. But I don't disagree with you. It's strange. I'm not sure why they haven't played him this year. I don't really. I mean, we see quarterbacks going to cities and play within a reasonable timeline all the time. Like Trevor Harris is doing it, so don't quite understand it, but I don't know. He's signed next year and expects to be the starter, and so we'll see.
And last night, Canada, a big win over Mexico. Shogger, it was electrifying atmosphere. You know, great game. Canada goes up 2-0. Mexico scores late, and then Canada makes a save on the goal line, for goodness sakes, to keep it 2-1. Man, that, like, that game,
Yeah,
great atmosphere, gets people going. I will say I was joking earlier when the game started. I said, Oiler fans, when they watch it, they'll probably relate to some of the non-calls on Davies. But when Canada went up 2-0, the amount of missed calls that the ref allowed at that point was mind-blowing to me. Like, he was convinced. He's like, I can't be 3-0. Like, I don't watch enough of high-level soccer to know that if you get up 2-0, is it automatically anything goes? Because that was it was prison rules after that.
Yeah, well, I was watching, too, and I can't remember who it was running down the field, and the guy basically grabbed him by the shirt collar and pulled him backwards.
Yeah.
And it was like, and the guy didn't dive. He stayed on his feet. And I'm thinking, well, they're punishing him because he didn't go down. I mean, if he'd have gone down, he would have gotten that call. So I'm not going to be the guy that tries to decode the nuance of soccer refereeing. We'll leave that for Matt Iwanek and Derek Van Dijst. But I hear what you're saying. It's a lot of game management happening, which is interesting. That it's certainly not just the NHL where game management can make a bit of a mess of things. But great atmosphere. Just awesome to watch it on TV and see all the people that were, you know, willing to go out there and brave the cold and cheer on Canada. It reminds me a lot of the women's tournament that happened here years and years and years ago, where Christine Sinclair burst onto the scene. The city never ceases to amaze me. And I think it brings into focus, you know, what we're seeing, what we saw happen with the Elks and their attendance, what we're seeing happen with the Oilers attendance, given it's a very different price point. People here are hungry to go out and be entertained. They are. It's been a rough go. And I think the city proved that. And so, you know, good for people for showing up and cheering on Team Canada the way they did. And very notable, these, you know, what we're seeing attendance-wise here for the Oilers.
Shagar, have a good one. We will talk in more rematch, Oilers and Jets.
All right, pal. We'll tee it up.